Now these are the rules that you shall set before them. When you buy a Hebrew slave, he shall serve 6 years, and in the seventh he shall go free for nothing. If he comes in single, he shall go out single. If he comes in married, then his wife shall go out with him. If his master gives him a wife, and he bears him sons or daughters, the wife and her children shall be her master's, and he shall go out alone. But if the slave plainly says, I love my master, my wife, and my children, I will not go out free, then his master shall bring him to God, and he shall bring him to the door or the doorpost. And his master shall bore his ear through with an awl, and he shall become his slave forever. When a man sells his daughter as a slave, she shall not go out as the male slaves do. If she does not please her master, who has designated her for himself, then he shall let her be redeemed. He shall have no right to sell her to a foreign people, since she has broken faith with her. If he designates her for his son, he shall deal with her as with a daughter. If he takes another wife for himself, he shall not diminish her food, her clothing, or her marital rights. And if he does not do these three things for her, she shall go out for nothing, without payment of money. Whoever strikes a man so that he dies shall be put to death. But if he does not lie in wait for him, but God let him fall into his hand, then I will appoint for you a place to which he may flee. But if a man willfully attacks another to kill him by cunning, you shall take him from my altar, that he may die. Whoever strikes his father or his mother shall be put to death. Whoever steals a man and sells him, and anyone found in possession of him, shall be put to death. Whoever curses his father or his mother shall be put to death. When men quarrel and one strikes the other with a stone or with his fist, and the man does not die but takes to his bed, then if the man rises again and walks outdoors with a staff, he who struck him shall be clear. Only he shall pay for the loss of his time, and shall have him thoroughly healed. When a man strikes his slave, male or female, with a rod, and the slave dies under his hand, he shall be avenged. But if the slave survives a day or two, he is not to be avenged, for the slave is his money. When men strive together and hit a pregnant woman so that her children come out, but there is no harm, the one who hit her shall surely be fined, as the woman's husband shall impose on him, and he shall pay as the judges determine. But if there is harm, then you shall pay life for life, eye for eye, tooth for tooth, hand for hand, foot for foot, burn for burn, wound for wound, stripe for stripe. When a man strikes the eye of his slave, male or female, and destroys it, he shall let the slave go free because of his eye. If he knocks out the tooth of his slave, male or female, he shall let the slave go free because of his tooth. When an ox gores a man or a woman to death, the ox shall be stoned, and its flesh shall not be eaten. But the owner of the ox shall not be liable. But if the ox has been accustomed to gore in the past, and its owner has been warned but has not kept it in, and it kills a man or a woman, the ox shall be stoned, and its owner shall be put to death. If a ransom is imposed on him, then he shall give for the redemption of his life whatever is imposed on him. If it gores a man's son or daughter, he shall be dealt with according to the same rule. If the man gores a slave, male or female, the owner shall give their master 30 shekels of silver, and the ox shall be stoned. When a man opens a pit, or when a man digs a pit and does not cover it, and an ox or a donkey falls into it, the owner of the pit shall make restoration. He shall give money to its owner, and the dead beast shall be his. But when one man's ox butts another's so that it dies, then they shall sell the live ox and share its price, and the dead beast also shall be shared. Or if it is known that the ox has been accustomed to gore in the past, and its owner has not kept it in, he shall repay ox for ox, and the dead beast shall be his.
Yes, I know. How many oxes do you people have? Okay, a bunch of you, right? Must have, what, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 10? You got 2 oxes? You got 1 ox. How many oxes? How many donkeys do you got? It's like, this doesn't fit in today, right? Why are we spending our time on it?
An oxymoron.
An oxymoron. Now, so since we already know this doesn't apply to us, shall we just move on? No? No? Oh, we got someone going to make a comment here. Oh.
As someone who works in the insurance field, the rules, of, particularly the ones about the oxen,
yes,
and the responsibilities of taking care of one's animals and making sure one's animals are safe and secure and not a threat to other animals or to people, these rules, these basic rules are a part of our rule of law to this day in terms of dogs. You know, we might think of this more in terms of vicious dogs or something like that. If you know your dog is prone to be very...
Or you train one to be that way.
Yes, exactly. If you train an animal to be vicious, or the animal may be inherently vicious because of its breed, then you know that and you don't hem that in and take responsibility for it. Your homeowner's insurance or whatever is going to pay when it mauls a 2-year-old kid or when it mauls another animal. So these rules, we think of, I don't own an ox, what's that about? But we can see these in our rule of law, you know, now.
That's amazing. It took an insurance person to pick out the little tiny asterisk down there. She's adorable. Okay. There's a comment over here, a statement over here.
On another subject. Okay, some people will use these scriptures about slaves as if God is condoning slavehood.
Okay, good question. Oh, we got another comment down here.
To me, this shows the fact that God is a fair God.
At least we know he's not unfair, because he's
supposed
fair.
You're supposed to keep things as fair and as right as you can.
All right. Next. Right down there. He has something to say.
Verse 33 and 34, isn't that a relation to what Yeshua said in Matthew 12?
What verse were we looking at?
Verse 33 and 34.
33.
Isn't it having relations to
Matthew
12, 11?
I got so many notes here. I got to keep 33 and 34. What'd you say now? Think a man shall open a pit? Verse 33?
33 and 34.
Okay. What about the pit?
The donkey falls into a pit.
Yeah, okay.
Didn't Yeshua say something, same thing in Matthew 12?
I haven't looked at it from that point of view. I mean, that's an interesting approach. Yes.
Yeah, regarding Shabbat, falling in the pit. Regarding the slavery thing, issue, I personally like John Walsh a while back had discussed it and put it, I thought, eloquently, in that you, individuals here, are the slave. You all are. All of us. I am too. And our owner is God. So does God advocate slavery? Oh, you better believe it. And do we want to be slaves? Of course. I want to be slave to him, because the point is that the slave doesn't do his own will. He only does his owner's will. And his owner will not injure him as long as he does his owner's will. And he went through the whole Bible, discussed it, showing the examples of the slave mentality is, it's actually more of a desire to be the slave. That's what you'd want in life, because God is supposed to be your owner.
Okay. Oh, someone's got a comment over there.
So this pertains to us, right? We are, when we came to Christ,
okay,
right, we are saying that we're his slave. He okay. gives us an opportunity to walk away from him. If we come to say, someone comes okay. in and say, oh, I don't okay. have anything to do. Am I right? Is this?
Well, we'll get there.
Okay, and I think that he gives us an opportunity, and then, good, I'm going to get a wife or a husband. I'm just looking at this like the perspective of what he's saying, and I want to make sure, I've often thought this, that I'm not off key here. when I decide to come to Christ, I do become a slave, and then he does give me an opportunity to stay or go. And that's true, right?
Oh, another comment down here.
In relation to what Yeshua is also saying, but no slave is greater than his master.
I see we're bringing in the New Testament here, aren't we? There's an interesting statement, half a minute. Interesting statement that my wife read from an individual online. And how it'd be about the Bereans? You know, where do they find the Word of God? Oh, they went to the New Testament and found out exactly what Jesus was saying. Oh, they went to Matthew, Mark, Luke and found out. Oh, maybe they went to Paul. They challenged Paul, actually. So where'd they go? They went to where it is written. So now, when we go back to this thing, we have to find out what is written and why. Yes?
The idea of a slave, you know, I'd like to know what the difference in the wording or Hebrew word between bondservant and slave. If there is a difference.
A bondservant is someone who's been bought, paid for. You bought them. Okay, now, I have said many, many times, I'm going to repeat myself again today, just in case you misunderstood what I said many years ago, or many times ago. This is not about how people should treat people. This is how God treats people. And he wants us to be just like him in treating people. All right? Now, the very first word is, these are the judgments. They're not just ordinance or rules and laws. They are the judgments that God told Moses, these are my judgments. I want you to tell them, this is my judgment. Not the people's judgment, not the state of Israel's judgment, not the state of Christianity, not the state of Judaism, not the state of anything else, but it's mine. First thing we have to focus in on, who's talking here? It is not Moses talking. Moses had no idea what the judgments of Elohim were at all until he was told them. So get our focus into this pattern here. Okay. So the first thing we have to ask ourselves is, okay, what was this first, quote, judgment? I'm sorry, what? Oh, if you buy a Hebrew slave, oh, but what about that non-Hebrew slave? It's not listed here, is it? All right. So we have to ask ourselves, oh, he's talking about people who speak Hebrew. Oh, didn't fit, huh? Okay. He's talking about whom?
His.
Whom?
His people.
The Jewish people? Didn't say Jewish people.
No, his.
Doesn't say that. What does Hebrew mean? The one that, what?
Well, it's a sojourner. So if it's a Hebrew slave, that means anybody who is already a sojourner amongst God, or any outsider who decides to become a sojourner. So even if it is a slave which you earned in, for example, in a battle, and you captured someone, he says, wait a minute, yeah. I like your God. I like your rules. I want to live by your ways. Guess what? He just became a Hebrew slave.
So now, the first person who called a Hebrew was whom? Who was the first person to call a Hebrew? Abram. Abram, first one to be called a Jew. I mean, excuse me, Hebrew. Now, what does that word mean? And there was one verse, is that one that has, quote, crossover. Well, or he's from another land, or he came from another place. What did Abraham actually do in order to be called a Hebrew?
He passed the test.
He was to depart from the world of his father, the world of his family, and come into the house of and the family of God, and he responded. Now he has come into a different world. One thing about Abraham, he searched for a city that no man built. You remember? So we're looking at what a Hebrew, not a race of people, not someone who speaks Hebrew, but someone who has been called forth out of a place they once were, and they left the place they once were. They no longer live in the world that once was. Now they live in a world of promise. They live in a world where God has brought them. Does that make sense to you so far? We're looking at what took place back then, okay? Now I know in a spiritual sense, quote, or religious sense, quote, or a Christian sense, quote, you crossed over or you left your world that once was. Actually, God led you to that world as God led Abraham out and told him where to go. So all Abraham did was respond to what God said, and you are responding to what God has told you to do. That makes sense to you? It's not a race of people, not about people, it's about what God is doing and his judgments. Yes.
Okay, so you just said something. You said that people have a promise, because I get sometimes to the, I ask myself, you know, these promises in here, are they mine? So what you're saying is...
Yes, they're yours.
They're mine. So I can say, okay, yes, these belong to Deborah. The enemy says, they're not for you. You don't got these. You don't... Nah. So what you're saying now today...
Well,
you can back it up
by the book of Galatians, I think, it's, if I remember that correctly. That now the promise is there, it's ours. All right?
So I'm entitled to have all the promises that I can find and speak. They're mine.
Our promise from God to you, not promises you have to keep.
Okay, that's what I was trying to say. These promises are made to me like my healing. Because something's stopping me, whatever's stopping me from receiving that. Something in my ideology, something I'm thinking is... I'm not receiving that healing. So we got a problem,
right.
Houston.
Yeah.
I got to get a better mindset.
So the first thing he says, 6 years. Oh. 6 years. Wait a minute. This is God's judgment. Not about people, but what God's judgment is. He says six. What happens on the next year? So I'm sorry, what? He goes free. Oh. Where does he go when he's free? He's been paid for. He's been bought. He no longer owns himself. Somebody owns him. After 6 years, the payment is completed. Right? According to what we see here. Is that right? Because that's what God's judgment is. Is it about people trying to be people? Is it people trying to be God? People don't even... Why seven? Well, I'll call it a bond servant. Because, you know, in our country, a person's brought over here, and they were bond servants for 7 years. And that seventh year, they got free to buy their own land. Well, okay, they followed some rules and regulations that was come out of a nation called England. All right. But here is the word of God. In the seventh year, he shall go out free for nothing. Why would God do that? Why would he, his judgment is this, we'll put it in the New Testament times, right? He bought you with the blood of his son, and after 7 years, you can go out and owe nothing. Why that? Does that make sense? Of course not, in our thinking. Because see, we don't think like God. Yes. You thought?
I know that this is literal, but it's also figurative, because as a mother, I do not, and I was in charge of children
yes.
for a space and time. at about 3 times 7 at 21. They need to be taking care of themselves. You tutor for a space and time. That servant has walked with God for 7 years. They're supposed to be paying attention. They're supposed to learn what's supposed to be done. They then have to bear the responsibility of their own choice of what
to do. They have to care of their what?
Responsibility.
Responsibility. All right. Now, the transaction changes over. Now, he also mentions something else here in verse 3. What did he mention there? He says, he came in by himself, he shall go out by himself. Why? If he is married, however, he could take his wife with him. If he came in with his wife, he is bought with his, he and his wife are bought together. Now, he says, but if he wasn't, only he can go, but not his wife. That's a judgment of God. Human judgment would say, you can't take a man away from his family, his wife, and his children and grandchildren. You can't do that. That's against the law. Daniel.
Again, if you view it as a slave and you're the slave and God's the owner, then if you come to God and God says, yes, I will accept you as my own, and then you find some girl or some lady in your community that you really love, who loves God also, and you get married, God has provided her to you. Now, if you say, okay, God, I don't need you anymore, go away. Now, does that mean God say, oh, because you said goodbye, I'm sorry for this wonderful woman who I brought up for you, she has to go with you and abandon me too? How's that fair to her? It's not. So if you view it that way, it makes sense. God says, hey, if you want to leave, fine. Your wife is still belongs to me, still knows who I am.
Yeah.
And you may not. That's
she's still mine, not yours.
Exactly.
But they were came together, they are echad before they came in. They go out, echad. Yes.
That kind of actually reminds me of, I don't remember where it is, but Paul. And he's talking to people who are married and people who are widowed and people who are divorced. And the married people who are in the assembly, he tells them, if your spouse doesn't leave and they stay with you, keep them. But if they want to go, let them go.
That's the judgment of God, not the judgment of people, not even the judgment of Apostle Paul. That's the judgment of God. Do we see a little bit here? It's a little difficult sometimes for us because we have a tendency as human beings to relate it to flesh and blood. We don't have an idea. This is not related to flesh and blood. This is related to the creator of heaven and earth and us. All right? Now, these are his judgments. And do they have a bunch of Hebrew slaves as they came out of Egypt? Doesn't say they did it. They were all free, right? No one was bound money, or probably paid for, or anything. You say, well, God had to look out for them before they happened. No, he's made a judgment. This is my judgment. You will carry them out, Moses. You make sure those elders understand everything which I am saying. Remember I said that I think, my personal opinion, that when Jethro came, his father-in-law, here is Moses doing all the judgments. He says, you don't do that. You have to have men here who also love this thing and want to be part of this thing. Let them do the judge. If it's too hard, then let them come to you. Otherwise, let them make the judgment. What's with the judgment? Would an ordinary, quote, judge, in a quote, be able to handle, quote, the first issue? Or would it only be Moses? Well, the issue, judgment's already there. You will let him go. Don't have to go to Moses to find out, what does the Lord say? He can go to one of the judges, and the judge says, this is the judgment of God. He doesn't say this is the judgment of the judge. And later on, if we get into Exodus more and more, and especially in Leviticus, you're going to find out that every time there was a judge to make a judgment, he bases it upon what the judgment of God was. Why we make it more clear what the judgment of God is. The judgments of God, not past tense. They're present. They're always present. So far, we understand what I'm saying? Now, if his master has given him a wife, now Daniel used an explanation, which was kind of a cool one, in relationship to, quote, bond servant, and he finds a wife that's in the body or in the, quote, house of the master, not in his house. He didn't bring her with her. Now, still the master's, quote, bond woman slave, if you want to put it that way. He bought her also, and he said, I'm going to give this one to you. And if he really, truly, and the word is correctly here, that he loves his master, listen carefully. Verse 13, and the servant shall say plainly, what does he say first? I love my children. I love my wife. And I love my master. First thing he has to say plainly, clearly, so no one misunderstands, who's the first person he must say this to? His master. Now that may seem unfair, quote, on an earthly basis between flesh and blood. Because, see, we think flesh and blood. We think of slavery in the sense that the United States was that way, and sometimes it still is, in certain cases, certain people. But that's another issue. Which I just, okay, forget it. Anyway, but you understand what I'm saying. So the first thing that the person who was bought by, quote, the master, and the master says, now you are allowed to go now. You are free to go. And go where you want to go. And the guy says, but I love you, master. I want to be part of your world. I want to be part of your family. I want to be part of you. And I also like that wife you gave me. I want to be part of her too. I want to be part of the children she bore that are mine. I mean, they're yours, yes, because you bought her, and therefore they belong to you as much as she belongs to you. However, you know, so we see a different picture here. This is not about how to make people fair because, quote, God is fair, in a quote. No, these are judgments. These are things that were told before anything started to form as a people, as a nation, as a country. They didn't form as a country for 40 years later. Quite a ways, isn't it? Long ways. And here they're told, on this day, it was happened to have been the day that the Ten Commandments came down, and Moses said, okay, God said, I'm going to teach you some more stuff. And there he was, learning. Now, that may not be the only things. This may have taken more than a day or two. I don't know exactly how long God took and explained in detail. And this is just a... God's one thing I learned about God. He's really not full of an awful lot of wind. He gets to the point. Famil. You got it? Yeah. Okay, next. It's almost like he says, I don't have to have... I can do a one-liner, and you'll understand exactly what I'm saying, don't you? No speeches. The Ten Commandments, were they a speech or were they a bunch of one-liners? An awful lot of one-liners, weren't they? We all got the message. One time he dragged it on a little longer, having been on the seventh day, about the Sabbath, and a little about about also the lusting after your neighbor's stuff. And about the images. Stayed there for a while. Now, we go down, very important, verse 6. Now, Jeff read it correctly. Now, some of your old King James versions, because they can't figure it out, because actually in Hebrew it says, Ha Elohim, the Elohim. And most of yours may have, it says, the master shall bring him into the judges, has been said. But in Hebrew, it's the Elohim. So he's bringing it before, and the creator of heaven and earth, bringing it before God. Where? Well, probably at that point, either at the tabernacle, and in the future tense, with it all, it's going to happen, and when the temple, basically, has been established. Okay? And he says, Now, the master's going to do something. Going to put a hole in his ear. Now, what does that mean? Does God put a hole in your ear? Did he do that? You say you want to stay here? It's after 7 years, you know. On the seventh year, did he say, put a hole in my ear? Is that what you asked? What does that mean? And just put a ring around it. Why?
He seals us with his Holy Spirit.
Anybody else? I'm sorry, what? Other people would know what? This is mine. Don't touch him. Yes, Jeff.
Well, it sounds quite similar to the way that the priests were, you know, with the blood on the earlobes and
the thumb
and the toe. So it's a sense of just as the priest listened to God, the servant then is one who is not only listens, but is also permanently marked in his ear to his master.
So the bees, why the ear? Why not the toe? Because you got shoes on, right? Why not in your, you know, belly button and cover it up? You're going to hear what your master tells you, and they all know you're paying attention to your master because he says something, and you're going to respond to your master because you love your master. Is that hard to understand? Now, even in the physical world we live in, okay? I have a ring, my wife has a ring, a lot of people have a ring because you're married, because why? For other people to know something about you and, quote, who you are joined with or what we may say belong to. And here, the ring was the very same thing. In the prophets, he talks about the house of Israel. As I put an earring, I think it was in his nose or ear or somewhere, so you'll know it's mine. Okay? I find that very fascinating. And it says this word, and he shall serve him forever. I mean, is that slavery? Is he really, is this slave such a horrible slave, or slave that really gets beaten and clobbered and thrown in the dungeon every now and then, but he has to be there forever if things don't quite go right with him and the master? No. You become, now this is the judgment. This is the judgment of God. When you've made that decision, what do you become? What do you become? All right. I'm sorry, what? Become family. Okay.
Well, you notice in the text earlier where it says that the slave plainly says, I love my master, my wife, and my children. It doesn't say, I'm scared to death of my master.
That's right. The master's a good master, and he loves his master because the master is good. It's a good master. All right, says, I'm going to stay with you forever. Oh, who can guarantee that? Oh, let's continue on. Yes.
You guarantee it by decision.
By distinction.
Decision.
Oh, decision.
You decide to do it.
Well, this decision was done in the seventh year. For quote, the bondservant. I'm going to be with you forever. And the master says, okay, I'm going to make sure everybody knows that they're with me. I bought you, gave you your freedom. You said, I don't want to go. And you're mine now. It's a bonding thing, to tell you the honest truth, between a good master and the servant. We'll get a little bit later on down there. Now, verse 7 is really odd. That's really difficult to us to understand, right? Because once again, our mind goes to where? Flesh and blood. This is a judgment. And it's really an unusual judgment. Now we say, well, it's in order to protect the girl. Well, now, wait a minute. The very first subject matter was bond servant. A Hebrew who is a bond servant. That's the subject matter of this text. Right? How is the servant? What is a servant supposed to do? Oh. Does he do the judgments of his master? Now, this master, if a man sells his daughter to be a maid servant, a bond female servant, he sold, the master bought her, right? So he had to buy her. So the master bought her, and she will go out as, she will not go out as the man's servant, the bond man is. Now, why? Why is that? Why is that judgment there before it even took place? Does God have something about women? He lets the man free, but doesn't let the woman free. Don't let her go. She can't go out after 6 years. She's allowed to be free. She's allowed to come back and say, "Oh, but I love my husband, and I love you, my master. I love my husband, and I love my children." She can't say that because why? It's not the same for her. Now, does that mean that God isn't, what is our political phrase we say today? Politically unequal? What? Politically correct. Okay. Yeah, we're women. We have this thing, you know, you go borrow money from the bank. They call themselves an equal opportunity lender. Okay, so God is an equal opportunity slave owner, except when it comes to women. Is that right? Why would he treat a woman differently? Well, here's a question. If she pleases not her master, this is very interesting because Hebrew is not worded correctly here. A lot of people have their own definition of it, and I grant you, I'm not going to fight it. Who has betrothed her to himself? He bought her. Okay, this guy's got a daughter. He's going to sell the daughter to this guy. The guy pays money to the man, the father. And now she belongs to him because he paid for her, right? And he later finds out, you know, she's not really what I really wanted after all. Oh, I got to do something with it. How am I going to do about it? Well, he can't sell her. Now, she can be redeemed. Who buys her back? Her what? More than likely her father will buy her back. So he turns around and if I paid you, a million pounds of gold, and thank you, now all of a sudden he's got to turn around and say, you could redeem her back. I want $1 million back. Well, not according to the law. Yes.
It's deliberately built to where she is taken care of, whether she's under the master's care or the servant's care or reverts back under the master's care. She's always provided for it, always taken care of.
And she's never to be sent anyplace else. Why? Why couldn't this guy say, "I'm going to sell her to the Greeks"? Why couldn't he? Why would God say no to that? Technically, legally, racially, yes. That's not the issue here, though. Yes. You know what I'm saying?
I was just talking to Jeff about this. So it's an interesting topic. For those of you who have been to different churches and different organizations over the years, wherever they've been, you go into the pews, you go and sit down. How many women are there than there are men? There's usually a lot more women than men. So 7 years go by. Do the women want to leave? No, they don't. Do the men? Yes, they do. So I think that that's part of the detail is women seem to, as Jeff Robert does, seem to have a more draw or attachment as a general population, does not say every human being, than men do. And it's a curiosity.
Now, one thing is very important, because some of the translations list it as though she is the wife. In Hebrew, it says differently. If she is not pleasing to him, so that he has not betrothed her. I looked that up in Hebrew, and sure enough, the word is lo, not betrothed to him. Now, it says, but she was treated badly. Okay? So this master, this is not the one I want. Maybe she's a loudmouth woman. I don't know. Whatever he doesn't like about her, he doesn't like her. And so he wants to get rid of her, but he can't do it the way he wants it to be done. And because he has done something wrong with her, he's done something he should not have done. I don't know what it is. God just says, because he's done it. You made a deal. This is the deal. You've broken the deal. You cannot do this. She now can be redeemed back. She can buy her. She can be bought back. And she's out of your life, right? Now, remember, that's a judgment. And he says now, of course, he could betroth her to his son, right? In other words, he could, in this case, it's positive. And well, how is he supposed to treat her? Like a daughter. Not like a bond maid. She is no longer, if he's given it to his son, she is no longer a bond woman. She is now free woman. Yes.
Daniel, you brought up the fact that churches often have more women. I think that is descriptive of the situation. Women know they need a covering. And the Master, God, is willing to give them that covering.
Now, that being said, how does that relate to the Creator of heaven and earth and His judgment? What is He saying here? Let's say He is the Master. Would He treat the woman wrong? What if He did buy her? And she's doing things that's not pleasing to him. What is he supposed to do?
Because this is how we're given to Jesus Christ, right? That's how he can take ownership of us, his people, right?
Repeat.
That's how we became. We were gods, but now if we are misbehaving, we've been sold to the Messiah.
How does one overcome that?
Is that true? How's it overcome it?
How would one overcome that? If you become displeasing to God,
how
would you turn it around if you could turn it around?
The
He can't. What does a master do? He either redeems her or gives them to his son. Gives them to his son. Those are my thoughts. And he shall treat her as if he is his daughter. So no matter how displeasing, I mean, but we'll go on later on when a servant does things he shouldn't be doing there also, and what God's judgment is. Yes.
I think when we're reading this, I think when we go in from the thing with the male servant to the female servant, our Bibles just say slave, slave, slave. It just will translate it all the same. But the Hebrew word for the male bond servant that's spoken about earlier in the chapter is aved, while this female servant is a different word called ama. So we need to realize they're different terms, so they don't have the same status, which is a little bit downplayed in the English translation. But number two, just focusing specifically on this issue of this female slave or ama, this is not, the father is not selling off a 14, 15, 16, 18-year-old, basically young woman.
Yes.
This female slave is prepubescent. She is a young girl.
Yeah.
So she might be, let's say, 7, 8 years old. So she's sold to this master, and so at this point, the master is raising her probably to be a future wife for one of his sons. So if at the end of all of this, if she's unpleasing to him or to the son, a lot of it is on him because obviously he didn't raise her right. If at the end of all that time, she's still not marryable, if he still doesn't want, if she's not worth marrying after being in his own household, right, learning his
ways for seven plus years. Good point of view. That's interesting to look at.
Whose fault is that?
Yes.
That she's not marryable?
Yes. It's not hers.
It's not the daughter's fault, but it's not the father's fault either because he had no, the father who sold her to these folks had, was no longer raising her. So if she's unmarryable at 14, 15, 16, 18 years old, whose fault is that? It's actually the master's fault. Because he's the one that had control over her and exposed her and educated her at that, from that point forward. It's his responsibility. She's under his house now. So if she's unmarriable at that point, either to him or to one of his sons, that would be on him. So I think that's why you see here, he doesn't have the authority to sell her for a profit, doesn't have the authority to sell her to a foreigner. And then if after all of that, he's supposed to let her go without even asking for money if she's totally unmarriable.
Now, verse 10, the word him, hard for me to determine which the him is. I think it means him the son, not him the master. I may be wrong on that one. It's not very clear in Hebrew what that's referring to. But basically, the first chapter talks about giving it to his son. Now, it would say the next statement is, if he, I'm thinking for the son, takes on another wife, guess what he must do? She's still number one. If he takes on another one, yes.
In a sense, this plays out in the book of Esther. Esther's parents are dead. Mordecai covers her, takes care of her, raises her like his daughter until she is marriageable age. And he has leadership over her. He's not the king of her. He's the guide and director. Sometimes the words translated to English make it sound wicked rather than a statement of service obligations.
It's also a funny thing because there's three things that are listed here, and it's these three sayings the guy will not forget. Yes?
Well, for me, a perfect picture of this is Judah and his three sons.
Judah and
Tamar.
And what?
Judah, his three sons, and Tamar. Because, you know, he gets her, she's from another nation. And she marries first son, the first son's mean, so God kills him. She marries the second son doesn't do what he's supposed to, so God kills him. And then the third son, you know, Judah doesn't want to lose his third son, so then he leaves her in her father's house. But that's not according to
that's kind of an interesting way of
God's
looking at
law.
It. Yeah, I never thought about it that way. But he must provide her food and clothing, and one more thing. She's still as her duty as a married woman. She gets first. She doesn't get what the other one gets because she's prettier. She gets it first, primary. Primary one is her. Take care of her. If you don't, you're in trouble, he says. If he does not do three unto her, funny terminology, right? Okay. Then she, what? She goes out. She doesn't have money, but she is free. Fascinating judgment. Now, this is not a bill of divorcement. Did you notice this? It's not where Moses had to do it, make the men, because they're rotten and cruel to their wives, and gives them a bill of divorcement so they can, woman can be free. This woman was free because those three things were not taken care of. Now she's free. Free for what? Go out and raise cattle? She can go out and marry another one. That's how I read it. I could be wrong. I mean, I'm wrong many times before. I thought of very finances.
If it is, like I said, Does this mean that, so if someone was in this predicament, let's just say, like I said, it was Jesus can buy us back. Does that mean that, let's just say, use me hypothetically, I was displeasing to God. I mean, he had me first, and I was with him for 6 years. Somehow I offended him.
I can't really tell.
That's why I need Jesus. I'm not sure I did.
Yes.
I mean, I know.
I understand your question. I don't have a good answer for you. I'll tell you the honest truth.
But this is part of... This is part of this.
What does she do? Where does she go when she first is free to go? Where's she going to go? To the gutter? To where? Yeah, back to her father. Because the Torah says she will be, she must be taken care of. Now if the son, no, the son doesn't go back to daddy. The only one that comes back to daddy is the daughter. It's just, that's even the way in our society today. How many fathers who love their daughter when they're in trouble, how many of them said, don't bother coming back. Oh, well, I'll make room for you. If the son comes back to dad, I have a problem. He says, work out. No, grow up. Snap out of it. Become a man. That's how men are. No. Yes, Jeff. Daniel.
I don't recall exactly where it is or which prophet it was, but one of them specifies, talks about the issue of divorcing your first wife. And he talks about it and says, Judah, you won't go back to your first wife, meaning, this is God speaking, meaning himself, because you hate divorce and you like your second wife now instead. And God calls Judah, the country, out on that, says, you've done something evil, strictly against my laws. And that even if, for example, you cited the Messiah says, okay, I don't want you anymore because you offended me, go to the wife. If God says quite plainly, that won't happen because he's not allowed to say, I don't want you anymore. You are his first wife. You always will be his first wife. That will never change. It's you, however, who have to correct your own life to maintain your wife, your relationship, as Gomer was with Hosea, I think it was. That has to be corrected. That's on your end. But he won't divorce you. That was the detail that Judah was being called out for. They divorced God, and they went to other gods. And God said, that's not allowed. You don't get to divorce me. You don't get to divorce your first wife. You
that's
must go
answer.
Back as it was originally designed.
Bailed me out. Thank you, son. I mean, you know. Now, the rest of this chapter is kind of relatively simpler to go through. The first part of it is difficult. So we're talking about slaves, quote, and women being bonded and not the freedom to do. It's real difficult for us to look at it, but these are the judgments of Elohim, not the judgment of Moses, not the judgment of tradition, but of God. Now, when I go through these things, I have to ask God, okay, what is it you're talking, what are you showing me? What is it I need to know? And I've said to you many times, sometimes I don't get the answer. And some years later, all of a sudden the answer's there. Because he wants me to think on this one. He sends me there, because I wouldn't get this one if I don't see that part first. I've learned that about God. Now, verse 12, he that smites a man, basically, so that he dies, he shall also be put to death. Mm-hmm. We got him, right? You kill somebody, you're going to die for it, right? Uh-huh. Now, there's this asterisk. Do you see this asterisk? It's the next verse. So it kind of joins together, be death. And if a man lies not in wait, but Elohim delivers him unto his hand, then I, not Moses, will appoint thee a place where he shall flee. Now, that's odd, don't you think? First of all, you smite him, you're dead. However, if you did not lie in wait, so the first one tells you, you lie in wait to kill him. He says, now if you don't lie in wait, and you follow, and Elohim delivers him unto you. There's a comment from one of the commentators. He says, this is what we would call insurance people used to do that. Act of God. Something that you have no control over. It just happened. There it was. And the Bible talks about when someone accidentally kills somebody. Now, blood vengeance is what is required. Now, it doesn't mean that God delivered him, but the situation in there is that God didn't stop it, didn't prevent it from happening. Doesn't mean the guy, God says, oh, you know, I want to drink. I'm going to send him over there so he'll kill him. But I'm not going to let him know he's going to kill him. Okay, get over there. Dead. Okay. Sounds logical, right? The numbers, we won't go into that today, but it's more written in more detail in Numbers 35 and Deuteronomy 19. When I can go there today, when we get there, we'll get there. But keep this part in mind. These are just the, quote, one-liners real quick. They go into detail much later. Verse 14. But if a man, or anybody, what is he doing? Presumptuously waiting. And to kill him. He will not be acquitted. Thou shalt take him from where? From the house? No. From the streets? No. From my altar. Why is that there for? If a man lies in wait to kill somebody, has or, quote, it was accidental, he goes to a place where he would be able to flee. One of those places they're able to flee was where? Where? Okay. The horns of the altar. Remember one of those very wealthy kings? Name? Yeah. Took the words right out of my mouth. Yeah.
Killed Joab.
Huh?
Killed Joab.
Killed Joab. Took him from there. And does he lie in wait to kill somebody? He wasn't supposed to do that. Now, next one is about smiting, verse 15. Smiting or striking, and one translation has it, let's see, what do I have? I think I've written down here, yeah. No, I don't have it written down here. Hits or strikes his mother shall be surely be put to death, or it means even also the point of killing. Later on, he used the very same phrase in the 17th chapter, but go in now, or something that we have to look at. Now we have 15th verse, talk about mom and dad. And you strike him, what's going to happen to you? You're going to be dead. But what about self-defense? Then you go to a place of safety. We'll talk about that then. All right? Now, if he steals a man, I find it very interesting. This is right next to, or in between, verse 16, 15 and 16. That if he steals a man and sells him, or if he be found in his hand, he shall surely be put to death. Now, some of the translations have, in the complete Jewish Bible has it, whoever kidnaps anyone must be put to death, regardless of whether he has already sold him or the person is found still in his possession. Now, another commentary for a guy named Plaut. He who kidnaps a man, whether he has sold him or is still holding him, shall be put to death. So he says, whether he got the money or not. And then the next verse, right back to mom and dad. Now, it doesn't say here smite, does it? Yes.
I'm just thinking about Joseph later on being kidnapped.
Kidnapped.
And those sold. People were not, yeah, those people were not put to death. So I just am wondering about that.
Did Jacob know the judgments that God told Moses? Did Joseph know the judgments that God told Moses? No, Moses came afterwards. That's very important. Very, very important to know a distinction between those two locations, those two timings. Because we see something in Genesis that seems to be not agreeing with Exodus. Nor does it seem to be agreeing with Leviticus or Numbers or even Deuteronomy. Seems like it's another story. So we have to ask ourselves, what is it, God, that you were trying to tell us? Now, he who curses, or one who insults, then the translator put it, his father's mother shall be put to death. Why? Now, I know none of you ever cursed your mom or dad, ever. I got white. It's all white up there. It's glowing white, yes. That's kind of funny. We're talking about things that put people to death, right? Yes. You could say something? You're going to give a translation here. I love it.
Well, I'm sure you're probably going to answer this at some point, but you have verse 15 where it talks about he who strikes the father and mother should be put to death, and that word for strikes is, right. There are different translations, attacking, inflicting, correct. Killing, ruining, slaughtering. I mean, so it's not just like a tap or something. This
oh, no,
is
it's, you're striking your mom or dad or going to strike them to die,
yeah.
But may not succeed.
But then you have this verse about kidnapping, okay?
Yeah.
And then it goes back again to the parents saying that he who curses father or mother, and that word for curses is talking about slighting, trifling, cursing, maybe abusive words or despising, making insignificant, making light of, or
insignificant, make it unimportant, night.
But then the question would be is why wasn't that verse mentioned
right after the 15th verse? And why wasn't that
why is the kidnapping thing
in between?
Yeah. I assume you're
well, I have a possible answer, but I can't tell you what the answer is because I don't know. As you know, that the what we call the Tanakh, that is the first five books, who was responsible for putting them together? Do you remember? Ezra. Ezra. Yes.
That's a potential solution to your question. Not saying it's right, but it could be. Is that so? If I have a son or daughter who is attempting or desires to kill me or my wife, I can't go kidnap him and sell him.
Okay.
So I can't sit there and say, okay.
You can't retaliate
off this problem to the police station.
Okay, that's a possible
that
connection there. Okay. That's funny. That's funny. Okay. But you know, when she talked about the word curses, now there are two words for curses. One of them is the one that is different. The one they said, when this is Abraham, those who, curse you, I will curse them. It says there, not says the word, those who think lowly of you, or that you're unimportant, I am going to curse. Two different words. We translate them both to being curse and curse. One of them is speaking lowly of somebody, speaking that they're unimportant, and this is where she is referring to, and she rattled off the many definitions of the word curse in this particular Hebrew word. And that is thinking of your mom and your dad are worthless, have no value, and you don't want anything to do with them. Pretty nasty stuff. Oh, great. 3 o'clock? Real quick. Verse 6, 18 and 19 and 20 and 21 are not too far off. One is about when a person's when two men are fighting, okay, they're courting, you know, men do that, you know, women never do that, just men. They get in a fight and one of them picks up a stone and kills him, or maybe he is, you know, a boxer and he hits him with his fist and guy gets killed, right? what happens to him? If the guy doesn't really die, but he's injured until he reheals. Now, it says here that if he rises and walks about, even if he has to use a cane, crutches, or you might say wheelchair, then shall he that smote him be, in a sense, acquitted. The payment has been completed. However, he was paid for his losses for his time until he can get up and walk around. That doesn't work with our country today, does it?
Yeah, it does.
Oh, really?
It does. Because looking at this again from an insurance point of view, I deal mostly with car accidents, so I'll use that example. If you are negligent in driving your car and you cause an injury to someone else and they survive the accident, your insurance company acts on your behalf and they are responsible for three things. They are responsible for paying any kind of wage loss. So if the person can't work and you have to pay them their wage loss based upon what they do for a living, not based on what you do for a living. So if you're a mason, but the person you hit maybe is a lawyer, you're responsible for paying his income based on his lawyer income, not based upon your mason income. Okay, so you're required to make sure that that's taken care of. Their time off of work, based on the victim's standard of living. Number two, you are responsible to take care of all the medical expenses until that person is patched up and back on their feet. And then number three, you're also responsible to compensate for pain and inconvenience or pain and suffering.
Until he is completely healed.
So that could factor in, like, loss of conjugal, while someone's healing, or all of those kind of things. You are responsible to compensate them for, one way or another. So we still use this as a standard, to some degree or other, across the British world, across America, now.
Now, these are judgments of God. Why not? But there's the one law they have that you can sue Gary forever and forever for damages in the heart and the mind, and emotional, but not really there. What's that called? The what?
Pain and suffering.
Yeah.
Well, you could be responsible for future medical expenses, because the caveat to this is that most states have a statute of limitations that you have only a certain narrow window of time to make the claim. So in California, for example, it's up to 2 years. That you have the right to even make a claim for injury that someone else injured you. So there is that kind of limit to it, too.
I need her around once in a while to tell how insurance people think. Because she's part of the law. So she knows the law reads, you know. And sometimes, you know, I got to cross this one out now. I got to cross that one out. And I thank you. I read you. Got to get this thing done. It's 3 o'clock already, for crying out loud. And if a man smites his servant, this is different now, or maidservant, with a rod, and he dies under his hand, this is really hard for us to understand. He shall be surely punished. How? Notwithstanding, if he continues a day or two, that maidservant, he shall not be punished, for he is his money. What does that mean? That's an odd judgment, isn't it? That doesn't make sense, right? Where do we go with this one?
But if you go further, he has to release that servant for the sake of whatever body part he hurt. I read that in the Torah somewhere, but if a slave loses his eye because the master injured him, then he has to release that slave for the sake of his eye.
Oh, I see. So you're reading ahead of me, aren't you?
I'm sorry, I already read this part.
I want to wrap this up. I'm taking too long. I'm going to go into verse 23, and then I'm going to stop there, because I got a lot more to say. I'm sorry about that. And I got too much more to say. This is very interesting. Now, I'm reading the Old English. I had to look it up in Hebrew to find out exactly what it referred to as well. If any mischief fellow, then thou shalt give life for life. What is a mischief fellow? You have no idea? In Hebrew, it's one who brings forth harm deliberately because he likes to bring forth harm. Not for a reason, because I like a guy, just because he wants to hurt him, because he likes to bring forth harm. It's like, there was one person many years ago, that there was an elderly lady that was attacked by a thug just because he wanted to do it. And he kept kicking her with big boots on. And he liked to hear her scream and yell and shout. He wanted to kick her till she died. Of course, someone stopped him in advance. And so you say, how would God make that judgment? Well, she didn't die, but if she did, he dies. He had no reason to do it. There are people on the face of earth just like to do harm. Vandalism, destroy, because it's fun to do. Let's just harass this person just because the thing I want to do. At that, this is where the law comes in, which we think applies to everything under the sun. It's the one who is causing harm for no... We talked about the one who caused harm to mom and dad. We talked about the one who caused harm to a friend when they were fighting. We talked about the harm that accidentally killed somebody but didn't. We already talked about somebody who killed somebody, murdered somebody for purpose of killing them. We know what those are. Now here is a different one. And this is where it says, an eye for an eye, a tooth for a tooth, a hand for a hand, a foot for a foot. The guy should have been... Somebody should have taken a good set of boots and had him down and just kick him. Kept kicking him as much as he could possibly kick it in relationship to how much the woman was kicked. Eye for eye, foot, teeth for teeth. And what will happen? Wound for wound. Stripe for stripe, burning for burning. The way you treat somebody, this mischief person, or the one who likes to bring forth harm because he enjoys hurting people. I don't know if you ever met anybody like that, or heard anybody like that. But this is how God says to handle it. This is a judgment of God. Now remember, it does go before the elders. No, we'll talk about that much later. God, I'm going to run out of time here. But we have an idea, and this is where she walked in here and said, now if he smites his servant and he loses his eye, he's free. And same thing with a tooth, he's free. Those are kind of like not eye for eye and tooth for tooth really situation at all. Had nothing to do with the mischievous person who likes to do harm. If the master, however, likes to do harm, because he likes to beat up his servants, eye for an eye, tooth for a tooth, life for life.